Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody, Don Williams with Inside College Soccer. I am so excited today. We've got Dave Simeone on. Dave, if you've been around for more than the last 20 years, for sure in coaching, the last 10 years, you know Dave as a legend in coaching education. Dave has done so much for the United States in coaching education. Not trying to embarrass you, Dave, but he's a legend and he knows everybody that began this whole process of true organized coaching education in the United States. It used to be kind of a scattershot approach until it started getting organized and coming together. And Dave was part of that. Hey, Dave, welcome to Inside College Soccer.
Thanks so much, Don, for having me. I'm really excited to have a chance to talk to you about this.
So, Dave, you work with what is your job with United Coaches? What is your job?
With United Soccer Coaches, I began in this full-time capacity in May of this year as the Director of Education Programs. So I relocated here to Kansas City.
You notice I stuttered there with the name because I wanted to say NSCAA. It's just ingrained in me.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't even think of the name of it for a second. Okay. So you're in Kansas City, but you were in Texas for most of your career, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. I spent a good deal of the last 35 to 40 years in Texas, left a couple times, came back a couple times. I originally relocated to Texas, to go to graduate school at Midwestern State University. And they were an NAI program at that time. And I had the pleasure of getting hooked into that via Shellis Hyman, an old and longtime friend and colleague. They kind of nudged me into graduate school. And I had the pleasure of working with Howard Patterson there for 4 years, who did an incredible job with the men's program. And that's how I initially got to Texas.
And then how'd you get into continuing with coaching, and how'd you grow? Where did you go? Where'd the journey take you? Let's let everybody just kind of hear a little bit about your background.
Well, that whole opportunity to go to Texas, it really lined up a few things for me that wouldn't have happened anywhere else. The state director of coaching that time, John Casabun, he involved me in education, which was very early then. I can remember in 1984, a D license was on three pieces of paper, and it took two weekends. And it was the genesis of everything. I mean, in coaching education, we were getting a lot of input and influence from people like Walt Chiswitz and Bob Gansler and Tom Fleck, among others. So John really involved me not only in the education part of it, but was very lucky at that point to be asked to coach state teams. And in those initial state teams, those were kids born in 67, 68. So there were people like Carla Overbeck and Brandy Barnes. And it was such an accelerated youth environment in Dallas and in North Texas. And I really got the bug at that time. And my whole goal was at some point to become the state director of coaching, which I was lucky enough in 89, South Texas hired me as their first full-time director. And then with my history in North Texas, when that position opened up. I moved to North Texas and assumed those responsibilities. So for 10 years, I was the director of coaching in either North or South Texas, and that proceeded to lead to a full-time coaching role with the women's national team program. Tony DiCicco hired me, and we learned of the appointments in late 98, and then in 99 they became official. So prior to 99 and being full-time, I had the pleasure of coaching with Shannon Sarofsky with the U18 national team, and just been very, very lucky, not only in those roles and responsibilities, but I've had the chance to work with some dynamite people, and I treasure that.
I appreciate that you're being humble and say it was lucky, but I try to tell people all the time that luck is created by a lot of hard work and sacrifice, and oftentimes willing to do things that people aren't willing to do.
Yeah, no, I think that's true in everything. I think it's true. And, you know, if you want to be an engineer, if you want to be a musician, you want to be a gymnast, or you want to teach and coach, then I think there's a lot that goes into that, that you put in that eventually, because you're investing in yourself and you're open to learning yes. and growing and,
yes.
and then you meet like-minded people, or you meet people that create a little bit of friction. And that's okay too, because I think this is the hard part of education. It's the hard part of coaching players as well as coaching coaches, is the interpersonal interaction. People are the toughest things we deal with sometimes, regardless of how smart and bright and innovative they are. And so we have to learn how this all takes place and how we work together. So those people management experiences are just as important as the expert information in the technical and tactical components of coaching soccer.
Yeah, it's funny. I get asked all the time, how do I get into college coaching, right? And my answer is, go to your local, whatever school, and walk and say, I want to be a volunteer. I'll do anything. I'll line the fields, pick up the cones, just get into the environment. Yeah. And if you do a better job as a volunteer than the person they're paying, guess what happens when the person they're paying moves on?
That's right.
You get offered a job, and then you're in the system, and then you just have to do a good job, and you have to work. And then of course, understand that coaching in college requires up and down movement quite often before you settle into where you want to be. And it's very nomadic at times. Not always.
Well, it's very specific too. I think college coaching, high school coaching are very specific realms. You know, they're unlike being a club director or a club coach. You know, you're in high school, you know, you're an educator. You're hired because of your teaching content area and your teaching certification. And then you're a coach. And then in college, you know, wow, you can find some JC jobs. Really interesting position.
I did that for full-time tenure track for 8 years, brother.
Yeah. And so you're teaching adjunct courses, and you're recruiting a whole different realm of kids than you are at a four-year school. And even within the four-year schools, there's a lot of differentiation in the kind of kids you're looking for that are going to end up being the right fit for you. So there's a whole group of skills and knowledge that's relevant to each one of those coaching dimensions.
I'm glad you said invest in yourself. And I tweet this all the time. And those of us that are willing to invest in ourselves, bet on ourselves.
Sure.
We'll stand a much better chance than those that aren't. And I notice this, kids trying to go to college, they want to jump straight into UNC, right? They want to go play for Anson straight away. Then, which is fine, there are those that can do. We see them on the national team. And then there are those kids throughout the country. I've had Anson recruit a junior college player from me.
She
ended up getting selected by Krikorian at Florida State. Yeah. But those kids were willing to bet on themselves. They were willing to sacrifice, invest, and bet on themselves at some other level. And then they get recognized for their greatness once they've proven themselves. And I think that's such an important concept for players, for coaches, and for all of us in life.
Yeah, I think they need the right message. You know, I think at the club level, club directors, club coaches need to give them the correct feedback and the correct input. Very small percentage of kids are what I call shouting talents, you know, where their talent is obvious. They are prolific in terms of performers. And then there are kids that are going to bloom later, you know, they're whispering talents. You know, that's a moving target. I think too many times in our environment in America, it's like when we start to use the word, well, that youngster's good. Well, that means they're there. Well, you got to define good. You also have to know what not so good is. There's a whole different set of dimensions to it. And then academically, I think it's so, you know, it's really hard to talk to a youngster who's got a 35 or 36 ACT, and they really need another year of experience or exposure or investment. But it's hard to say, look, you need to go to a junior college for a year and create a market value for yourself. And I think, like, academically, they're not going to be challenged. That's not where they're at. So there's a lot of different facets to where kids belong in college. And once they get away from home, we see it now more clearly than ever. Once they get away from home, they get a little uncomfortable. Things aren't so easy. They're a little bubble wrapped at home. Now there's different set of expectations. Mom and dad cannot do it for you. You have to buck up and you got to hoe the road. I think it's harder for kids now because of that.
I love this, Dave. You know, we talk all the time, and you know, all we do is college placement. That's all we do. Yeah. And it is my most common phrase that comes out of my mouth is, it depends. Whenever somebody asks me anything about college, I said, it depends. It depends if your kid is U.S. national team quality. It depends if your kid is, like you said, a 36 ACT and wants to send rockets into space. Yeah. It depends if you have the money to be able to afford MIT when, you know, they're probably going to cover some of it, but aren't going to cover all of it. Or I always use my friend Michelle at Baylor as an example. It's $82,000 a year, folks, to go to Baylor. And if you can't afford the Ferrari, then stop shopping in the Ferrari showroom. There's other schools that will still meet your academic needs and your soccer needs that are maybe you can swing, right?
Right.
And it depends.
Yeah. It's very true. It's very astute. Plus, from the parent and the player, especially if it's the parent's first time, you can't see behind the curtain. The college coach, through their network, through their expert knowledge in the recruiting realm, they can see the pieces moving. This kid's in the portal here. This kid's in the portal there. This kid, I think, although we're recruiting, I think she's going to go someplace else, or he's going to go someplace else. Or I think, you know, we're going to surprise people. I think this kid's going to come to us. And so you don't, as the parent, you don't see all those moving pieces, you know? So you must manage things and organize your approach so that you got a couple of different layers that you're looking at. I was just talking to a colleague of mine in Canada who is talking about a young lady that's being recruited by an institution here in the U.S., two institutions, and the difference is in money. Her parents are like, well, this is 75% or 80%. This is 100%. I said, well, then you're going to make a financial decision. And you, in a year, will know whether you made the right decision or not. Transactionally, today, you will know. But in a year, will you be in the portal? Or is it better to pay $20,000 that you don't want to be where you want to be? Playing for a coach you want to, getting your education in an institution you aspire to. But if you're a year down the road, you're in the portal, what did you get out of that? And it's really hard to talk to people about that because their emotional attachment to everything, you know, their kids or what it means to go to one school versus another. So it's all over the place.
I always say it's a series of tick boxes, Dave.
Yeah.
And if you put the most important ones at the top, then you start ticking them off. This is the non-negotiable, and this is the sort of negotiable, and this is the, yeah, I can give that up. And you tick, and then you pick the one that fits the most tick boxes, but you can't give up your non-negotiables, right? If you compromise on your non-negotiables,
right.
Maybe it's your education for some kids. Maybe it's location for some kids. Maybe it's the soccer for some kids. My kid went to school for soccer, by the way. I don't think he cared where it was, as long as it led him on the journey to do this as a living. And he's coaching at North Carolina State now. So he's been able to do that as a living because that was his goal. He didn't really care where his marketing degree came from. That's some kids too.
Yeah, that's right. You have to know, to your point, you know, it's the right fit always seems to me. There's an economic piece one way or another. There's a soccer piece. And then there's an academic piece. And you have to figure out, you know, like how this is going to work. The other pieces are like, you'll talk to kids, say, yeah, but I only want to go 2 hours away from home. Say, well, okay, stick a pin in, get 100 miles. That's where you're picking. Well, would you go another hour if this institution is interested in you and is a possibility, an opportunity there? Well, maybe, okay, we'll make it, you know, another hour. And it's just not very strategically thought out. These are my priorities. These are the things I really want. These are the things I might have to consider, you know, what do I give up to get? And then these are things I don't have anything to do with, you know, but I'll compromise on these things.
You know, my semi-joke to families, if they're from Kansas City and I'm talking to them and they give me that line, I'll say, so that means don't contact Stanford, right? I mean, Stanford is off the table. You don't, well, no. For Stanford, I'll move away from home. Okay, I'm not contacting Stanford about you, but I am making a point that, hey, you will compromise, but you're saying it depends on the school. It depends on the situation. It depends.
Right, right.
And there we go back to the word, it depends.
Well, it's situational. Now you can throw your priorities and everything out the window because now, it's situational. And this is where things get wacky. You know, people throw all of their priorities out the window because, you know, Stanford's Jeremy Gunn or Paul out there are like, wait a minute. You know, you're talking about they have 27th unrecruited walk-on. Would you go to Stanford for that and be a 27th? Well, maybe not. Okay, well, that's...
Now it depends again, right?
It depends again, exactly. It's unbelievable.
Favorite word. And I think it's been made more complicated. What do you think? Does it feel to you like it's more complicated? I hate to sound like two old men talking here, Dave. But does it feel more complicated to go and identify the kids now that we have the GA and the ECNL and the N64 and the DPL and the OPDBL and the ESL? And now does it feel like, it feels to me like it's more complicated because I remember there was a time when we just went to the regional championships and we saw the best teams in the region. Then we went to the national championship and the McGuire Cup was something. People were proud of winning that McGuire Cup because it meant something. And I don't know. We vacillate back and forth. This current system probably gives more kids an opportunity, more to develop and to grow by having more opportunities to play. On the other hand, I'm going to tell you that I was at a major recruiting event this weekend and there were 12 college coaches there because some were here, some were there, some were there. And they're all going on at the same time. I don't know. Do you have feelings about that or thoughts?
Well, I can tell you when it all changed, in my opinion. I think you're right. The opportunity for more kids to play. Unfortunately, the standard changes, and now quantity versus quality becomes a factor. So at North Texas, when I became a full-time technical director, the Classic League in Dallas went from under 12, under 14, under 16, under 19, six teams of Division One. And then like the under 14s, the best under 12 team played in the under 14s. The best under 14 team many times played in the under 16. So the pyramid was tight. In 1992-ish, we went to 10 teams of Division One and 10 teams of Division Two, along with the single birth years. So like, let's go to Richland College, let's say, to watch the boys. You'd be like, wow, 20 teams in Division One and Two for boys where we used to have six. So it became very diluted. It also became very dependent upon some of the economics that drove it. So I don't think, look, none of us are silly enough to say, like, you're going to identify a kid at 11 and they are still going to be a dominant performer at 15.
Right.
But we are very fragmented now. So to your point, you got USYS and that platform. You got US Club Soccer, ECNL, ECRL, NPL. Now you got the GA. You know, why did that happen? Well, you can look at what the pushes and the pulls were to provide the incentive and motivation for there to be another platform. So there's MLS Next. There is Adidas Next Generation. No wonder college coaches, I mean, when you had a single pathway, now you can compare the apples to the apples, the oranges to the oranges, versus now they also, with the exception of, I mean, the Power 65, they have pretty extravagant recruiting budgets, but do they have to decide where they want to spend their time, not their money. So they're looking more. I feel like college coaches have become more astute. I thought one of the things that was easier for a college coach to do was, to your point, go to the regional quarters. But it also became too inane. You know, they would say, well, that kid's on a team that they're regional quarterfinalists, I'm going to recruit them. Now I think college coaches are doing more thinking on their own about who's a good fit beyond their soccer. Well, you know, does this kid have much room to grow and emerge into our level? You try and get in it. What college coaches, the big thing they all want to know is like, I can see this kid's fast, or I can see he or she is, I think they're a good player. What are they like on their worst day? What are they like on their worst day? What are they like when things are not rosy posy putting in pie? You know, do they want to crawl up in bed and pull the covers over their head, or are they willing to plod on? And because that's what college soccer, in many ways, doesn't matter, Division One, Division Three. The novelty goes out of it. You're still a student athlete. You still have to apply yourself. You're going to have days and weeks where it's like, not having much fun here. People told me it's going to be a little bit of a job, even in Division II and Division III. So do I love this enough? Do I really love this enough?
Yes.
Or do I like to say I love it, but... And we get the wrong impression, too, when we look at, you know, we had a month of World Cup games. There are bad days for those guys. When we watch the Women's World Cup, there are rough weeks for those women as either college players or pros, you know, where it's like not every day is a carnival and fun. And we need to let kids know that. And the front side says, well, it's what part of it involves.
This is such an important concept for parents and kids and even club coaches to really grasp onto, Dave, is that at the end of the day, we are so serious about a game. But it's a game I can't live without. I tried for about 4 years to live without this game in my early 20s when I first got married, and I couldn't do it. As soon as I was reintroduced to it again, starting to cook my kid, I was in full bore. And at 9 years old, I was introduced to this game and I fell in love with it and I can't get away with it. My son was the same way. He didn't juggle because he had to. He didn't juggle because it was a job. He didn't hit the kickback net because it was a job, or the garage door because it was a job. He loved it. He was addicted to it. That and his skateboard. He wanted to get really good at that. He was getting his balance with his skateboard. He was getting his soccer because he loved it. He declared at 10 years old, I want to play in England. I said, yeah, right. And then he went and did it. And that's this love of the game, this innate love. And something in me feels like a huge number of kids out there are playing out of an obligation to pay their parents back for the tens of thousands of dollars that they put into youth soccer. They just can't tell their parents no. And then when they get into college, they finally can say, I quit. And I think it's most of the, I think it's 50% of the girls and 60% of the, or 40% of the girls and 50% of the boys never made it off the transfer portal. A huge number of those kids just hung up the boots.
Well,
they just hung them up.
Well, that whole thing with the transfer portal and what it's done is not good for a number of different reasons. I cannot imagine if you want to transfer that, what are we teaching kids, young people, young adults, when you don't have to go in and have a conversation with your coach, you can just get on the portal. And then the coach's colleagues call and say, hey, do you realize Billy's in the portal? They say, what? No, thanks for letting me know. So, I mean, how is that an underpinning in trust and loyalty and commitment and all of that? So we're not doing a very good job. And I'm sorry to say that these are presidents of universities that are driving this boat, you know. There are not very many athletic directors at the Division I level that are former coaches. They are all juris doctorates.
Change, Dave. It didn't used to be that way. Were a coach if you were an AD back in the day.
That's right. No. Well, you can have an incredible amount of experience that gives you very specific expertise by being a coach for 15 or 20 years, and then moving into athletic administration. You understand the environment, you understand the pushes and the pulls. And now we have people as juris doctorates, God bless them, that they're lawyers. They don't understand. They may not have had an athletic experience in their life that's competitive. And now when young men or young women, they leapfrog and go right into the AD's office, it's an incredibly unbalanced environment right now. The other part of it is that the Power 65 is so driven by money. So my question is always like, the presidents and the ADs as business people, they have never made so much money in the Power 65. In fact, what tells us that from evidence is if they're willing to give kids and share with cost of attendance and NILs and everything else, they're willing to give up millions of dollars. My question is, what are they really making? I just can't put myself in a frame of mind where I was like, well, I'll let that $5 or $6 million go so that I must be making $100 million over here. Right. What it's done, it has changed all of the values about intercollegiate sport. So when I hear a president in particular talk about, well, you know, the value of an education, I immediately turn it off because his comments are totally counter to what they are teaching young people. So if this is about the money, then my recommendation would be like, all right, sign your NIL. We will give you your education, but you're not getting any cost of attendance. We're not going to support you signing NIL. You're a brand. So go make your money, find out where you fit in. And then from there, you know, find yourself a place to live. We'll give you your education, but everything else, you're on your own, you know, because that's what they're really saying. And that's what they're really underscoring. And that's what they're really emphasizing with kids. You're giving them a false sense of the way the world works. Nowhere in the world are they going to get cost of attendance. Nowhere in the world are they, very small percentage of people sign endorsement deals, whether you're a coach, a physicist. So this whole thing, it just not very based in realism. And we just keep giving people things. We just keep entitling the entitled, you know. It's, where do you think that's going to lead?
Yes, Dave. Now, actually, we'll talk about. I don't want to stay on this too much because I want to get on. I want to talk about the Coaches Association. Now, yep. But the transfer portal. The idea was born out of something good at the beginning because there were coaches in this country going, sure. "You're not released. You're not going to play. I will not release you. You're going to have to appeal this." Well, what am I going to do? That becomes acrimonious. It could take 6-8 months. I miss a whole season.
Yeah.
Those coaches, that attitude were the ones that drove this transfer portal to become what it is. So as coaches, stop complaining. We brought this on ourselves.
Yeah.
And now the pendulum has swung so far the other way, Dave.
Yeah,
I hope it settles back in the middle somewhere.
Well, it will eventually. Yeah. I believe people are good, you know, basically. And I think there'll come a realization somewhere down the road in intercollegiate athletics that there has to be more balance in it. There has to be people with expertise and experience in sport, know how to manage what the expectations should be in managing programs, managing athletes, interpersonal relationship. They have to define more clearly what is hard coaching. What is that, so that we understand what, you know, the other factors are that are not good, and we can define that more adeptly rather than, well, anytime somebody criticizes you, which partly is coaching, it's like, well, I don't want to hear that. They don't want to. This may not be the right place. This may not be the right level for you. You know, what happens at work when you're out of school for 5 years and you've got a decent job, but the boss is saying, look, at this has to get better. Who are you going to go? What are you going to do? Going to go to HR? Because the metrics are the metrics, not my subjective feelings. Some of them may be the boss's subjective feelings, but maybe like, look, you know, here are the metrics. The numbers are the numbers here. You know, the measurements are the measurements. So when do we get to say that in life? Or is that where society and culture is going? And it's like, well, no, you can do whatever you want to and we'll tell you it's good. It's crazy. It's gonna normalize again. I really feel like it because that's the way things work.
So convention coming up, my favorite time of year, honestly. This is the convention for me is my charger for my phone. It's that battery pack that you're carrying around. It's like, that's right, I got my battery pack. We plug it in and we just feel so relieved when we're done. It is the most amazing, let's see, it's the largest coaching association in the world. Is that still true?
Oh, yeah.
I know that used to be true.
I mean, no question. And we are the most unique because we incorporate, you know, you can go to England and go to the League Managers Association. That's all the pro coaches. You know, this coaching association is everyone inclusive. So, and there's a segment in the membership where it's high school coaches, where it's youth coaches. Within youth coaches, there's grassroots coaches, there's high performance coaches. So it is the most differentiated and the most inclusive membership in the world, I feel.
And literally, we will have people flying in from all over the world to attend this event.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, it's an amazing experience for me this year. I mean, I've been on the education development staff since probably 1990 and taught courses. I was a board member for 3 years in the early 90s. But seeing it from this side of the curtain, it's unbelievable. Everything that goes into it, we have our event managers, like our convention manager, Erica Dyer. She's unbelievable. Emily Miller, who's her sidekick. And then between our COO, Angie Eliason, our COO, CEO, Jeff Van Dusen, ran the convention for 10 years, lock, stock, and two smoking barrels, I like to say. So it's a major event. And seeing it from this side, and having the opportunity to drive some of the content for it, it's pretty amazing.
Let's talk about some of the content. So if I've never been to the convention before, right? First of all, just give me an overview of what types of different things there are for people to see at the convention if they've never been before.
Wow, it is a buffet of information and speakers. I mean, it's a buffet. I mean, if you're interested in grassroots coaching, there will be grassroots sessions. If you're interested in more detailed and sophisticated game models, and you know, the question is always with coaches, you know, I mean, how do I teach this? Let me watch someone else. Let me pick something from that I can apply. This is one of the great, I think, moments when we as coaches, you know, we watch. And this is one of the only environments you're going to go to in the world where we might have somebody from Manchester United presenting, or we might have a national coach or a national coach educator from Northern Ireland or the FAI. And you can run into that person in the bar, in the hall, and say, would you explain to me? I've seen this before. I never saw it. You actually have the opportunity to interact with these people. So we have sport psychologists coming in, people like
Dan Abrahams, folks. Dan, it's our man.
Dan Abrahams, who's awesome. Donna Fisher, Paul McVeigh, Rachel Linvall. I mean,
legends.
There are some folks that are just, and then I look at what we've done in involving and spotlighting women who have accomplished so much. Dr. Missy Price and Amanda Vandervoort that are part of the USL strategic planning. Margaret Domka, who's an accomplished referee. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Okay, everybody. Unfortunately, the internet went out and we lost Dave Simeone. So we're going to wrap this episode up. United Soccer Coaches Convention. It's the January 11th through the 15th. December 16th, there is a price increase. So get in early before the prices go up. I'm going to let you know, USL Super League president Anthony Flores, Philadelphia Union Technical Director. Adam Kuhn is the Satori Soccer Executive. Becky Burley, that's a big one. That was Florida coach for years. A lot of experience, drives. She's going to be speaking on what drives winning. She's a co-founder of that organization. Let's see, what else we got? Kai Edwards, our buddy Kai Edwards will be there from Southern Utah University. Laura Harvey will be there, OL Reign FC head coach. Dan Abrahams will be speaking. Great, always a packed room for Dan. So we have representatives from U.S. Club Soccer, USL, United States Soccer Federation, IAX, CONCACAF, Everton, FAI, from the NCAA, New York Red Bulls, Scottish FA. There's just so much going on. And then they've got a big exhibit hall. You can check out all of the gear, touch it, handle it, talk to people, different organizations. Do not miss it. United Soccer Coaches Convention will be in Philadelphia. What a great town. Come get yourself a cheesesteak. By the way, next door is the Reading Market. Go to Dinnix. Dinnix makes an amazing pork sandwich that makes me think that it's better than a cheesesteak, frankly. But what a great town. What a great venue. Join us. Come by and see us. Sports Recruiting USA will be on Podcast Row inside college soccer. You'll see us interviewing various coaches, dignitaries, people that we run into, friends that we know. We'll be doing a lot at the convention. We'll be hanging out. If you want to meet with us, let us know. Reach out. We'll have, I think, 9 staff members there from SRUSA. So if you're part of a club, if you're a club director, if you want to know how we might be able to help you with college placement as a club or as an individual, if you're just a parent, you want to stop by and say hi. If you're just a listener of the podcast, please stop by and say hi. And people goes, I didn't want to interrupt you. Just interrupt me. Shake hands. We're just people talking and meeting. And then college coaches, you know, we meet with you every year at the convention talking about your needs for wrapping up 23 and getting into your 24s. We're here to help. Stop by and say hi. Looking forward to seeing everybody there at the convention. Very excited about it this year. So Philadelphia, 11th through the 15th. Come join us. We'll have a great time. See you later, everybody. From all of us at SRUSA and Inside College Soccer Podcast.